Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Fenway Rundown, the premier podcast for all things Boston Red Sox.
I know people harp on the last place thing, but essentially what's important is the record.
If the Red Sox want people to start thinking the ownership cares, then maybe they should talk.
This is the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live. Here are your hosts, Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam.
Second straight day coming to you with the Fenway Rundown podcast. I'm Chris Cotillo. Sean McAdam's down in Fort Myers, as is Cooper Criswell. Red Sox right-handed pitcher, free agent signing from the winter, and someone that is thick in the mix, as we talked about yesterday, for a rotation spot. Cooper was great. He's a Tar Heel, as we'll talk about incessantly, so I apologize in advance for that. We'll probably have one more guest on the show toward the end of the week. Sean, tell the good people, you know, where they can find out first who the guest on this podcast will be.
Yep. Not only find out who podcast guests are, but also any updates and news on the Red Sox, a chance to ask some questions, have them answered directly, or have them read and answered on our mailbag episodes, which we do periodically. And to do all of that, all you need to do is text the word join to 617-751-6257, then click the link to subscribe. We spot you a 14-day trial period, and after that, we ask only $4.99 per month.
Cooper Criswell, our guest today, has been a rising name at camp for the Red Sox the last couple weeks. Seems like the Red Sox are high on his potential, and we welcome Cooper. I think this is, I'm not going to say it's historic in terms of having another Tar Heel on the podcast, because I think I had Daniel Bard at one point, but anytime we can do it, we appreciate it. So we appreciate your time.
For sure. I appreciate you and Sean having me on.
So we'll start with, you know, what life is like for you, you know, as your first year with the Red Sox organization, and just how you're approaching every day in camp. You know, I think Alex Cora, Craig Breslow, everybody's been pretty clear. It's an open competition. There are a couple of rotation spots available, obviously now with Lucas Giolito probably out for the year. Just how are you approaching this in terms of role, and what are you looking to show these guys right now?
Yeah, I mean, I just try to take each day, day by day, use the stuff that I do well, like go out there and throw all my pitches for strikes. You know, here and there we've been doing the weighted ball stuff, trying to tick the velo up, because we obviously think if I can tick up the velo, that would just make my stuff that much better. But outside of that, really just, you know, it's been awesome just being around the guys and getting to know them and how welcoming all those guys have been to me and the staff and all that. So just really enjoying the relationships that we've been building.
And for you in your first year, as you alluded to, like these are, there's a lot of introductions. I know you did have some friends and some familiar faces in the clubhouse when you got there. But just kind of being part of that Red Sox culture, and we'll get to why you signed here later on, but what has it been like just embracing that? You've been in a couple of organizations now, and just to come to a franchise like this and be part of it so far in camp, what are your takeaways been?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You know, you show up and you got Pedro, Hall of Famer there, Big Poppy, just hanging out like, the, you know, they're just talking to us like we're one of them. And, you know, that's how it is. And I think that's how the whole family, the Red Sox family, makes everyone feel welcomed and a part of it. At least I felt that completely, this being my first year. So, you know, just I think having those Hall of Famers like that, going out of their way, having those conversations, welcoming guys, that just, I mean, you can't help but to feel comfortable in those situations.
Does Pedro possibly have any advice for a guy who's 6'6", or is that out of his expertise range?
No, I think Pedro can help just about anybody in the when it comes to pitching, you know. So, you know, anything, any suggestions he has out there, you know, take them and run with them.
So, Cooper, you're new to the organization, but there are a lot of other people in decision-making roles who are new to the organization, too. You've got Andrew Bailey in his first year as pitching coach. You've got Justin Willard as the director of pitching. You know, it is a new regime here with a new chief baseball officer in Craig Breslow, and they're putting a new pitching program into place. How have you found that to be? Because we've heard from some veterans, including Lucas Giolito, who we had on the pod before his unfortunate injury, just kind of raving about the amount of information and communication that's going on. What are your impressions of this new pitching program and the people leading it?
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. Right when I started talking with the Red Sox, and, you know, once we made it official and signed right away, Bales had a program written up for me and got it to me right away. And, you know, started that, I would say, beginning of December or middle of November maybe. And, you know, just I felt like that's the cutter was something that we really focused on this offseason. And past few outings, the shape of it, I've really liked how consistent the shape's been. So I feel like that's something that we focused on with me, but it's not even, you know, I've heard from all the pitchers in the locker room that they felt like they had a, you know, that he talked to each and every pitcher and set up a specific program that's going to benefit each and every guy to, you know, what they do well and what he thinks they can work on. And I think that's just, says a lot about him and how much he cares about us as players and how much he cares about winning and wanting the Red Sox to get back, you know, to the winning culture. And I think, you know, just like you said, all the guys they brought in, they killed all the hires. I think they're for sure we're trending in the right direction.
We talked a little bit about this after your outing on Monday, which was excellent. You had 3 2/3 scoreless innings with, I think, 4 strikeouts. But you're, you know, particularly for a guy your size, you don't profile as a power pitcher. You're not a guy who's 95 plus with his fastball. What are the challenges in 2024 when there's so much focus on velo and getting that velocity up and being able to get swing and misses? What are the challenges for a guy who doesn't approach the job that way?
Yeah, I would say the, you know, it helps when you have 3 or 4 pitches that you can locate where you want to on that given day. Obviously, not my outing on Monday, but the outing before that in Minnesota, I got hurt on a mislocation, miscut, or left it over the middle of the plate and gave up the 3-run home run. So, you know, I feel like you have less room for error as far as hitting location. So I guess you just got to be that much more precise with hitting your target. So like I said, in Minnesota, we wanted the cutter up and in, and I left it over the part of the plate, and, you know, like it got hurt. So, you know, just trying to each and every pitch, you know, you got to get it where the catcher's set up and where you're intending to throw it.
You made reference to the team and Andrew Bailey working to maybe add at least a little bit to your velocity. What goes into that? You know, how do you at, you know, with a few years of experience, how do you get more life out of your fastball at this point in your career? What do they have you doing to do that?
So I've never done a weighted ball program in my career. So that's where we started this offseason. And then also just like trying to load my scap a little better, trying to get it, you know, more activated to potentially create a little more whip in there to, you know, tick up the velo, hopefully a mile or two. And then, also just continue to try to get a little bit stronger and using the lower half a little better, trying to drive a little better to the plate and just staying a little more close. So just trying to really sync up all the mechanics. And I think if we can get to that point where the scap and hips are a little more closed, then, you might see a mile or two increase on some pitches.
As you're working on all this, right, it's in game action, and so, it's not 100% what the regular season would be like, but you're facing hitters, the adrenaline's pumping. How do you kind of, and I've talked to other guys about this too, like draw the line or find kind of that common ground between trying to tweak and tinker with a new pitch or trying to get more in the fastball, but also trying to perform because you're trying to make this team and trying to earn a rotation spot? Like, is it sometimes like you want to abandon certain things and go back to your bread and butter, but also, the coaches want you to work on things in real time against hitters? Does that ever get tough?
Yeah, I would say it's for sure tough. You want to work on, for me, this spring training, the biggest thing that I wanted to improve was the cutter. And, I feel like the best way for you to do that is get game reps, So just like, for example, Minnesota, I was throwing more cutters and I didn't throw as quite as many sweepers as we normally do, just because I was trying to work on that cutter. And another focus point we had in Minnesota was the right on right changeup, and we threw some good ones that day. And then I would say yesterday was more so blending everything, mixing and matching throughout the game, more so like it would have been regular season. I feel like we're getting to a point in spring training where now it is kind of like to a point where, hey, let's put it together, kind of like, hey, how it's going to be in the regular season. So I feel like the cutter, the shape of it's getting to a point where I'm ready to just mix and match everything now.
Take us through, the off season and obviously the process of signing with the Red Sox. You were, DFA'd, non-tendered, and then after a couple weeks ended up, signing. And I think Jeff Passan, when he broke the signing that night, wrote that you encountered a very, very strong market, to the point where the Red Sox had to guarantee the major league deal, and they were obviously aggressive. What was that free agent process like for you, just talking with teams, and, how early in it did you realize the Red Sox were pushing?
So it was a pretty eventful offseason, to say the least. Welcomed our first kid. So this was right around pretty much during all this was going on, first son, first kid. And then I actually switched agencies this offseason as well. So that was all kind of going around the same time, I got DFA'd and cleared. So kind of dealing with that. And then, like you said, had some offers here and there. And then, the new agents, they were going to work for me and they did a great job. And like they said the market was super high for me, a lot of interest. And like you said, at the end of the day, we're able to get a deal done and super glad we did. Liked all the Zoom calls that we had with Bales and Craig. And like I said, I'm glad that we were able to get a deal done and make Fenway home, hopefully.
And like those improvement plans, that's something that they show you, or like the program, even before you're signed, like they already have that mapped out?
Yeah, they talked about it. They didn't have it written down specifically, like showing me this is this and that, but talked about it. And then once the signing was done, Bales put it to paper and sent it over to me on email, and got going on that right away.
Cooper, you spent about a year and a half in that Tampa organization that has built a reputation for being a real pitching factory, whether it's claiming guys that have struggled elsewhere, drafting and developing their own, signing free agents. Seems like everyone who goes there has some sort of success. What's the secret sauce that the Rays do so well with their pitching development and their program?
I don't necessarily know if it's like a secret sauce, but Snide's a great pitching coach and they have a great, their main philosophy is truly just throw strikes. I mean, middle, get ahead, make the hitter beat you. Don't lose the game to giving up a walk here and there and then giving up a base hit and then a run scores. Truly the philosophy is to make the hitter in the box beat you. No free passes. And I feel like that I tell guys a lot of times, like, when they get – I feel like for me last year sometimes actually when I got 0-2, 1-2, sometimes I would get hurt throwing middle. And, you know, that's on me too. I should have expanded some. Still make it a competitive pitch, but nothing too juicy, 0-2, 1-2. So I got hurt there a little bit last year. But I feel like that helps a lot of relievers that are hard-throwing guys that, you know, might struggle commanding the zone. And, you know, they just hear, hey, middle. It's, if you're throwing 98, 100, it's tough as crap to hit, even if it's middle. So, you know, I think guys just – buy into that and are like, hey, hit it if you can. And, you know, they, like you said, they're pitching staff and they've had success over the last several years.
I mean, it is a relatively simple approach, you know, throw strikes, get ahead, challenge hitters. In this day of, you know, drive line and all these pitching factories and data and everything else, does it surprise you that that basic approach can produce the kind of results that they have?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, I mean, obviously that's a simple approach, but it's, I would say it's throw your nasty stuff middle, you know, like your best pitches, and get ahead, like you said. And then, I mean, I forget the exact percentage, but I think 0-0 first pitch strike, or if you get ahead 0-1, then it's like a 5% chance they get a hit or on base, something exactly. So they truly believe, and I feel like it's shown in the several past years that, you know, that philosophy has worked out for them.
Yeah.
Let's get into the good stuff, or at least a bridge to the good stuff that I'm concerned about here. But, you know, looking at your bio, and I knew this, but I'll get the name of the school right, Southern Union State Community College. I wrote about a couple weeks ago with Zach Kelly and Justin Willard and at Concord University in West Virginia, and like how different that was from the big leagues. But you spent, what, 2 or 3 years at Southern Union State?
Yeah, so I was there for 2 years, graduated high school in 15. So I was there 16 and 17. And it is in the middle of absolutely nowhere. It's in a town called Wadley, Alabama. And they actually don't have any stoplights in the town. There's 12 or 14 stop signs throughout the whole town. And maybe I would say, I don't want to exaggerate, but I would say the population of the town's about 800 people. So super small town in the middle of nowhere in Alabama. And me and my best friend from childhood, we both graduated same year and both went to Southern Union. And then the first year, you know, I had a pretty good year. And then the second year, met my wife, met her there. She played softball. So Wadley's a great, holds a special place in our heart. And, you know, all our best friends that were in our weddings were all there. So, you know, I wouldn't change that route for the world. And like you said, the second year, good year, and then obviously was fortunate enough to get offered by North Carolina. And then after those 2 years, went there and then went on to get drafted.
What is the – I mean, have any big leaguers ever come out of that Southern Union before?
Yes, I'm almost – there's one for sure. He – golly, I feel terrible. I don't know his name. Golly, it's, if I heard it, I would for sure know. But there's been one from Southern Union, I think. I'm almost certain. And he played for the Yankees, but I don't know. I don't think it was too long. So I know I don't, there might have been somebody before him, but I'm not sure if there was.
Well, I mean, you know, obviously, that's, you know, when there's one guy ever or only a couple, a place like that, when does it get on your radar that, that pitching in the majors is a real possibility? Like, when did you kind of square that in your mind? Was it once you got to Chapel Hill? Was it, you know, once the recruiting process started when you were going to transfer? Like, when did that become a reality to you?
I would say my, you know, like you said, your childhood, you know, you always dream and think like, hey, you always say I'm going to be a big league pitcher or whatever. But I would say my sophomore year, junior college, I started getting some interest, some, you know, some scouts, talking to some scouts at the games, and thought there was a chance I might get drafted at a junior college. So I would say that's when I truly thought like, hey, there's a chance for you to, you know, actually make it in baseball, pro ball. But then, you know, when you, I mean, I feel like once you get to pro ball, that's like a whole nother process to, you know, get through right. the minors and stuff. So, but I would say my sophomore year of junior college, I was like, hey, you know, I might have a chance to get drafted eventually. And then obviously once I didn't get drafted, I was like, hey, you know, you can't beat going to Chapel Hill. So wasn't disappointed when that was the result.
Yeah, that was, as I've told you, my senior year, 17-18 was the year you were there. We didn't know each other, but just what did that year mean to you? And just being around, you know, that sporting environment, they're just off a basketball national championship. Trubisky inexplicably is going number two overall in the draft. Like just that year and you know, how much did that mean to you being there?
Yeah, it was cool, man. And then obviously JB and Warmoth and Brian Miller, all first rounders the year before I got there. So it was sweet, you know, coming from Southern Union State Community College to, you know, waking up at midnight for a tarp pool and going back at 4 a.m. to, you know, having your own grounds crew. It was life-changing for sure. But I would say, you know, I just tried to take in each and every day, because if I was good enough out of high school, then I would have loved to, you know, have a chance to be there 3 or 4 years, but that wasn't the chance. So, you know, just not many people get to go play Division I ball, much less ACC, SEC ball. So just super thankful for each and every day, and all the teammates and coaches that I crossed paths with there, you know, were outstanding. And like I said, I wouldn't have changed my route, you know, going through junior college and going to North Carolina for anything.
Hooper, you've got some baseball in your family, in your blood. Your dad was also selected a few times, including once in the first round. Did that help at all, you know, going through the recruiting process, getting drafted, turning pro? Could you learn anything? Did he help out there? What was that like for you?
Yeah, for sure. It's nice, you know, obviously when he was in the minor leagues compared to when I was coming up in the minor leagues, times have changed a ton. But it was nice, you know, someone who had kind of been the same route. So just any type of pointers he gave me. And then also he was a basketball coach at our high school for 30 plus years. So just, you know, being a sports-minded guy, so just – always growing up, you know, super easy to talk sports with. And I would say more than anything, we growing up is, you know, we're a basketball family, but we're happened to me and my dad both were better at baseball. So, but it's funny because we all love basketball deep down in our hearts.
I was going to ask you that because I think, you know, major takeaway from my time during spring training was that you might be the best clubhouse basketball player any of us have ever seen. It's like you don't miss on the mini hoop there. So what was your basketball career like? And I forget who told me this, but wasn't there a local connection, somebody in the family, you know, recruited by Holy Cross or something like that?
Yeah, so like you said, my dad out of high school went to Furman to play basketball and baseball. He did both, and then eventually getting drafted for baseball, and then came back, and once he was done playing baseball, went straight into coaching basketball at the high school that he went to, and then where we went to in Georgia. And then my older brother, Riley, he's about 6'9", 6'10", but he was a hell of a basketball player. And his senior year, he tough luck. He got taken out of the air going up for a dunk, and he injured his leg real bad, like severed a nerve and had dropped foot and dislocated his knee, tore all his ligaments. So he was never able to get back to playing, but he was the one who – he was committed to Holy Cross, so – familiar a little bit with it. I went up there twice and visited him, so that was nice, you know. And they honored his scholarship, so that was super, super nice on their part and professional. So he went up there and got his degree, but unfortunately, he was never able to play again. But went up there and had a good time. Still was kind of part of the team and met some great dudes. And now he's back home working though in Atlanta.
The last thing for you. That's a good segue to this. Most important question of all, your thoughts on the Duke game Saturday night and your March Madness predictions.
Oh, I know Cormac, if he can do that all of March, man, I like our chances.
It's all over. Yep.
But you know, I gotta ride with the Tar Heels to win it all. I seriously think they got a good chance. You know, the chemistry's there with Baycott and Davis being theirs for, you know, so long. And I think they know this is their last chance. So hopefully they can get it done.
Well, cheers to that. It's the best end.
Storm Franklin.
That's right. Once again, it's the best ending to a Fenway rundown we've ever had. Cooper Criswell, we appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Chris. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Cooper.
Thanks again to Cooper Criswell for the time. You know, Sean, you were there yesterday for the outing. You know, probably the first most extended time you've gotten to see him pitch. I mean, it sounds like you came away impressed from that.
Yeah, as we said during the podcast, Chris, he's not a guy that lights up a radar gun, and that's rare in 2024. Everybody wants to see 97, 98. He's nowhere near that, and that's a little surprising given his size. But he's more of a sinker slider guy, stay out of the middle of the plate, get weak contact, and it works for him. So we'll see how that, how that translates in the competition.
Alex Cora always says you need more than 5-6 starters to get through a major league season, and he'll definitely be in the mix. One more show this week, as we said, plenty of coverage on the site, on the pod, and you guessed it, the Fenway Rundown Insider Text Program.
Yes, sirree. All you have to do is text the word join to 617-751-6257 and then click the link to subscribe. You get a 14-day trial period with that. After, it's $4.99 a month. It's an opportunity to get current on all Red Sox news, get the news first, ask questions of us, and supply questions when we do our mailbag episodes.
This has been the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live.